Peace and blessings, black people. Welcome to Harambe Radio with the show, The Liberated Zone, with your host, Baye Kimmett. And I have two wonderful guests with me tonight, Baba Hannibal Afrique and also Baba Ajay Okoto. Before we begin our show tonight, I'm going to have my six-year-old son. What's your name, son?
Azikiwe.
Azikiwe. And he is going to open up with libation for us. All right. Moja and Billy Tatu.
Omi tutu, ana tutu, ile tutu, ona tutu, oja tutu, tutu larie, tutu e gungung, tutu e mi, tutu ori, tutu ye limbo, tutu ya mi, kosi ku,
kosi
arun,
kosi
akaba,
kosi
seju,
kosi
ding,
kosi
ebi,
kosi.
Kosi Kisibu, Kosi Lasan,
Kosi
Jamba,
Kosi
Dina,
Kosi
Ubure, Aiku Oluwa, Iba Orodumare,
Iba She,
Iba Orumela,
Iba She,
Iba Orisha,
Iba She,
Iba Bopo, Egungun,
Iba She,
Iba She, Vashe, Vashe, To, Iba Egung,
Iba Egung, Ashe, Ashe. And we're also going to have my son. He's going to do the Black Man's Pledge, which we do in our Unity Circle every morning. It's a poem that was written by Nathan Hare. Moja and Billy, top two.
I am the black man. The evidence of anthropology now suggests that I, the black man, an original man, the first man to walk this vast upon the earth. I, the black man, am an African. He is honesty and quintessence of the universal blackness. I lost my force. My name, my language, and this is my life. I will seize it back to help me. Toward that end, if necessary, I'll crush the corners of the earth and his will is sorely tremble until I, the black man, the first and original man, can arm a calm with my woman, erect among peoples of the universe, a new society, who made this cultural core. I will wish the last will emerge in light moments today, the first human being, as well as ever know. Ashe.
Ashe, all right. All right. All right, Harambe Radio, we're going to begin our show tonight. Again, I have Baba Hannibal Afrique and Baba Ajay Okoto, and I'm going to begin with our esteemed elder, Baba Hannibal, and ask him to introduce himself and to the crowd here tonight.
Well, first of all, it's a pleasure to be with your listening audience this evening, Brother Baye. We hope that we will be able to elicit some positive responses to African-centered education and institution building. I'm Baba Hannibal Tyrus Afrique. I'm the National Public Relations Officer for the Council of Independent Black Institutions, and we were the founder of the Shule Yawatoto School for Children in Chicago, founded February 5th, 1972, and we operated for 31 years. In Chicago on the west side. We are presently in Mississippi with our nonprofit Community Youth Achievers Environmental Village Campus located in Hermanville, Mississippi. And we are attempting to build a prototype sustainable community that will further African-centered education and nation building here in the Black Belt South.
All right, Ashe. Baba Ajay, can you also introduce yourself?
Okay, my name is Kwame Ajay Okoto. I'm one of the co-founders of Nation House Positive Action Center, and we just celebrated our 35th anniversary, and there are a number of other related activities with the school, but I'm happy and pleased to share whatever way I can, you know, with your audience.
All right, wonderful. All right, as co-facilitator of the Council of Independent Black Institutions and also our institution, the Garvey School, Edwin Omode Shule, as a member of CB, I just want to, you know, basically tell many people in the listening audience that if you have an independent institution or if you have an independent daycare, whether it be a school or whether it be an after-school program, Saturday school program, or whether it be an African-centered store, dance class, any of those things, we will definitely encourage you to contact the Council of Independent Black Institutions. You can find us at www.cibi.org and try to link up with us. You know, we are looking for members and looking for other African-centered organizations and African-minded people to connect with the work that we're doing with CB and that has been done over the last 37 years or so. So, Baba Hannibal, can you begin talking about your, I guess, experiences with the Council of Independent Black Institutions? I know that you were one of the founding members in 1972. And just talk a little bit about, just introduce the listening audience to some of the earlier times with CB.
Well, this is a very historic evening, and we're delighted to share it with Baba Kwame Adeokoto, one of our pioneer institution builders. My involvement in African-centered education began when I was teaching at Farragut High School in the west side of Chicago, beginning in 1963. And we realized that the educational system, public educational system, was actually the educational genocide for black children. And we struggled during the 60s in the community control of schools movement to bring about some positive change at Farragut High School, culminating in the removal of the racist, arrogant principal and running the school for a year and a half without a principal. You understand it was the first and only successful community control schools in Chicago's history. So that got me to the point of struggling to see if it was possible to extend the ambition, the vision of African-centered education beyond Farragut, because even though we ran the school for a year and a half without a principal, we still didn't control the resources, curriculum, personnel, facilities, budget. So in reality, this was a prelude to train us for actual institution building. So on February 5th, 1972, some of my high school students worked with me to create a Saudi Academy, what we call the Shuri Awa Toto, for children 7 to 14. And as soon as we began our program, it became obvious to us that we needed...
Hello?
...in African-centered education. And so we joined the Council of Independent Black Institutions as a Saturday Academy. All the rest was full-time established institutions. And you know, we were, you know, trying to sit at their feet and learn. And indeed, we learned. It was a very tumultuous period for African-centered education. We had such pioneer institutions as the East, where you see D2WC, founder of the school, and we had John Churchill Freedom Library Day School in Philadelphia. The East was in the Brooklyn community. We had Nairobi College Complex, series of elementary high school and college, Nairobi College. We had institutions that had established themselves, the African Free School in Newark, New Jersey. And it was a live period of concern, of vision, of being able to create our own African-centered institutions and educate our children to their maximum potential. So for the first, I would say, 3 or 4 years that the Shuri Awa Toto was a member of the Council of Independent Black Institutions, we participated in everything that they sponsored, the parent conferences, the teacher training institutes. It was 3 weeks long. John Churchill was head of that. The various meetings that we held at the East, because that was our flagship institution for African-centered education. We traveled from city to city, participating in CB activities, and it was a learning and growing experience. So not only me as the administrator for the Shuri Awa Toto, but also for those staff members and parents who also participated. So we became involved in CBU in its fullest extent. We were one of the institutions that premiered the first CBU film, It's a New Day. We had an opportunity to work with the curriculum committee out of Columbus, Ohio. We worked with the institutions out in California. And then by 1976, we in Chicago hosted the three-week CBU Teacher Training Institute and co-hosted by a new concept development center, a member of our CBU institutions that began in 1972 as well on the south side of Chicago. That was Haki Matabudi and Sophisha Matabudi's institution. And during that Teacher Training Institute, I was in charge of the science workshop. We posed the question to those participants, where do we go from here? And they decided that we needed to create a Pan-African Science Secretariat and publish a newsletter. And then we thought of the idea of maybe coming together and sharing science projects with each other if we could get the approval from the Central Committee of CBU. So we wrote a proposal in 76 requesting that a science exposition be held at the Rural Saucer, the East in Brooklyn. And it was approved in April of 1977. Over 200 students, parents, teachers, community residents came to view the science projects, interact with our students, and from that point on, CBU Science Expo became a reality. So we had our publication from DSU Teach, we had our Teacher Training Institute, we had our African Teachers Corps, the graduates of the TTI, were eligible to go anywhere in the country and serve as an intern in a CBU institution for a year, providing they would get a small stipend, housing, and meals. It was a very successful venture that many institutions benefited from. We had the National Black Parents Organization. We had conferences. We had meetings. We had a variety of activities appealing to both students, parents, teachers, and community. So during those initial years, I would say the first 5 or 6 years from 1972 to about 1976, 1977, there was a tremendous interest in institution building, and CBU was fortunate to be in the foundation of that movement.
All right. I appreciate that. Thank you, Baba, for the history, the background of CBU. I want to ask Baba Ajay if you can just give us a brief synopsis of how you all came in to become members of CBU and just essentially where you all picked up from where Baba Hannibal left off.
Well, we actually got started as an institution in 1974 in D.C., and at the time there were at least six or seven other institutions in D.C. who defined themselves essentially as being, you know, African-centered or Afrocentric at the time. And we got involved initially through NBPO, the National Black Parent Organization, which was, you know, again, one of the arms of CBU. And we did, in fact, participate early in the science fairs that Baba Hannibal mentioned. And we worked closely with CBU throughout the course of the 70s. We know we played an essential role. We participated in this, you know, in that period of enthusiasm and that Baba Hannibal was describing. From our own experience, that movement of a sort of a high point continued for, I think, a period probably into the 80s when we began to get another kind of swell. That was during after the election of Reagan and sort of the diminution of the enthusiasm that was very much at a peak during the 60s. And actually, we were also, as an institution, rooted in the 60s in the sense that the founders themselves actually were part of the student movement at Howard University. And it was actually on April 4th, 1968, that the core founders made a pact that that's, in fact, what they would be doing was establishing an institution, because we were also starting families at that point. And we, in fact, took example from the schools in New Jersey, New York, and Chicago. So in one sense, we were very much on the same path. And throughout the course of the 70s, once we actually joined the institution, we did participate actively, and were very supportive throughout that period. You know, we also recall the science fairs, the teacher training institutes, those in Chicago, those elsewhere. And I think we did, in fact, sponsor one as well, and we were very much involved in curriculum development at that time and since then. But, you know, that's our beginning with the CB.
Okay. So, what do you, at its height, at CB's height, where do you think, how many members do you think that CB actually had in terms of institutions?
Well, you know, in my role as a National Public Relations Officer, I previously was a National Historical and Research Data Officer, and I'm compiling my archives because it's been disorganized for a number of years, and I'm coming across many of the original documents from CB. And looking at one of our brochures, you know, we had over 30 members during the 70s. When I went down the list and tried to remember, you know, faces and institutions that scattered all over the country, it's a part of our history to not only build institutions, but we also need to continue to study how to maintain institutions, because we're looking at the list of institutions that were members and realizing that in most instances, those institutions began to decline due to internal difficulties rather than external pressures. And so I think that it is instructive to CB to at some point do a critical analysis of institutional management and maintenance, because that serves as the foundation for nation management and nation maintenance. And so we have a lot of lessons that we can learn from our past and the vision of creating our own African-centered institution is still alive and well. I'm continually encouraged by the work of CB members throughout this country, and we believe that we still have a couple of institutions in Ghana, and we hope that we'll be able to do an update and determine the exact status. But as an international umbrella for African-centered institutions, it's imperative that we continue to provide leadership to our community, because there is no question that whatever they want to call it, No Child Left Behind or economic stimulus or educational stimulus, there's no question that the public school system in America has been, is now, and will continue to deny African children the opportunity to be educated to their maximum potential. So CB is at a critical point in the history of education for African children, and we must continue our leadership role.
All right. Baba G, anything to say on that point?
Yes. I think what Baba Hannibal described in terms of the history of CB was also very much a global kind of phenomenon that African people were experiencing. Is that there's an explosion of interest and passion around the whole notion of African independence, or civil rights in this country, or Black Power movement, and that, like anything, after an explosion, once the dust clears, you have fundamentally what is central and what is the strongest, the core of it. And what we had, I think, what we discovered during this period, that once the passion itself had dissipated, the principles that were central to that movement had to be clarified. And I think we've actually experienced that. That is, you know, separating the flag from the wheat, in a sense that what happens now is that those people who, in fact, tied themselves down to both three things, family, culture, and ideology, we had to develop a concept around those, a paradigm that incorporated those three elements that had to become the center of whatever it is we're going to continue. And it's been clearly indicated, I think, in history of African movements, that passion alone couldn't do it. Religion, ideology alone couldn't do it. And that what was fundamental that we had to discover was that culture had to be the basis of this thing that we were developing. And not even business sense alone was not adequate, because business sense without the culture assumes that you're going to adopt the mainstream cultural construct. That's what you're going to operate in. So it was appropriate, I think, historically, looking back historically, that we not start as businesses. We had, in fact, to know who we are, what our direction was, what strategy we were going to use to go in that direction, and what our ultimate aim was. I think the notion of sovereignty was not even a word when we initially started the movement. We initially started right. building the institution, but we came to that. That had to be the direction. And coming to that sense of clarity would then provide the basis for our continuity. We didn't have that initially, but we had to grow to that. And in growing to that, you know, those who couldn't grasp it, only grasped some part of it, fell aside. They moved aside. So in one sense, while it was tragic and it was, you know, those who, the emotional attachment that we developed during the course of those struggles, those that work efforts, it was difficult to move back beyond it, but we had to move beyond it if we were going to secure the whole notion of moving toward African sovereignty. And it's not about how well our students do in the public school system. If we understand the very nature of the beast that we find ourselves in, by definition, it is intrinsically anti-African, and Africans would never really be able to achieve. I mean, that's just the nature of the beast, and that we would never be able to be assimilated into this system, this country. I think we need to accept that reality, and regardless of the Obamas or the other exceptions, so to speak. The nature of America is the nature of America. The nature of Africans is the nature of Africans. They're irreconcilable realities. And coming to that, then we establish a firm basis for our continuing and our continuing to build.
All right, Ashe. We are coming close to our midpoint, so I think it'll be a good time to take a break on the second part of the show. We're going to continue here in the Liberated Zone, where Africans are free to express their philosophies, their ideologies, and also their paradigms for practice with my guest tonight, Baba Ajay Okoto, and also Baba Hannibal Afriq. We're going to return on the second half, and we're going to look at some of the institutions that were a part of CB and why some of them ideally are not a part of CB anymore, or possibly even look at the charter school movement, and how that has played a part into, I would say, the decimation of many of the African-centered schools. So stay tuned, Harambe listeners, and we'll see you in the second part of the show.
Brother Hannibal?
Yeah, bro.
Hey, man, I heard you had an accident.
Huh?
You had an accident? I heard you had an accident.
Yeah, we can talk about it after.
Okay, I'll call you.
You got my letter.
liberated listeners. You are back with the Liberated Zone with your host, Baye Kemet. And tonight my guests are Baba Hannibal Afrique and Baba Ajay Okoto. Before we begin the second part of our show, I just want to give some shout-outs to some of the CB members that may be listening and those that I know that are with us in spirit, Dr. Kofi Lomote and Dr. Imali Mushuja down at Southern University at Baton Rouge, also Insurama Institute in Atlanta, Ijo Bashule in Philadelphia, Nubian Village Academy in Richmond, Virginia, my co-facilitator, or our co-facilitator in Minnesota, Mama Riquette, and also Baba Senyika Anwize in St. Louis at Hofi Nkwenu Academy. And hopefully I didn't forget anybody. I'm pretty sure there's other members. But of all the CB family, definitely want to say peace and blessings to all of you all. Ham Jambo. And also want to give a shout-out to, of course, the Kemet family, the Garvey School, the Egumomute Shule, and to a good listener, a supporter, Sister Obatala Ashe. All right, so Baba Hannibal and Baba Ajay, we were talking on the first part of the show about CB and the history of CB and how both you all individually and your organization have gotten involved in CB and sort of how the movement, in terms of its energy and its thrust, has, at this point, has taken a turn. I'm not going to say it's died down, but it has taken a turn. And so what I want to know is what has happened over the last, I guess, 10, 15, or 20 years, whereas there are not, even though CB membership has lessened, you know, even around the country outside of CB, independent education or independent schools has also decreased. And I want to know, in your opinion, or either in your experience, what have you seen? What can we pinpoint to some of the, I guess, clear reasons of why independent education is not as prevalent?
Good. We can do a brief overview. I would like to point out, you know, maybe four institutions that were, you know, part of our foundation for CB. Royal Sasa, the East in Brooklyn. And Kwasi Kuradu has done an excellent book on the history of the East. Sridham Rabbeinu Day School, John Churchill School in Philadelphia, Nairobi Complex in Nairobi, California, and Committee for Unified Newark, the African Free School in Newark, New Jersey. Now, in each case, there was either an ideological shift from the concept of being a revolutionary nationalist institution. And the whole Sasa administrators and core leaders felt that CB needed to have a stronger revolutionary nationalist perspective. And as a result of that ideological difference, the leadership of CB shifted from T.2. Williamson as a chair to Kofi Lomote, who was the administrator of the Shule Kujitambura in Oberlin, Ohio. Now, the Freedom Library Day School, John Churchill, his school was unique because it was pretty much an establishment school with a black overview. He was doing a great job of helping these inner city youth to demonstrate academic achievement, and they were very powerful. You might recall from the movie Lost Stolen and Strayed, narrated by Bill Cosby, Black History, Lost Stolen and Strayed. They had a segment on Churchill School. But he became disenchanted with the revolutionary nationalist perspective that CB was striving to move toward, and he closed his school. The Nairobi complex out in California was a very strong institutional base, elementary, high school, and college. But they were involved in gaining resources through the establishment. And the more revolutionary they became, the less resources were available. And they began to diminish in their activities based on lack of funding. Committee for Unified Newark and the African Free School in Newark was initially a strong model for how to create an African-centered independent program in a public school. They got permission to operate several classes in fourth and fifth grade level in the Robert Treat School in Newark. And they named that program the African Free School. So they demonstrated for that institution and the city of Newark that they were capable of educating those children to a higher level than the public school set. But because of the ideological shift of Amir Baraka, that program, the African Free School, diminished, and eventually Committee for Unified Newark diminished. Now, I do feel that it will still be very instructive, and Baba Adjei has been very, very succinct and clear statement in terms of revolutionary passion and fervor as compared to revolutionary commitment and nation building and institution building. And so there are lessons that can be learned from those, just talking about those four institutions. And it is my belief that those who came after and those that remain in CB are stronger because we're not making hopefully some of those same mistakes that were made, because we cannot depend on external resources. And in fact, to credit to CB's credit, we handed out accreditation and standardization of our African-centered philosophy, in which we identified the core principles of what it means to have an African-centered independent institution. And because of the strong position that we took, that maximum in terms of at least 50.1% of the institution's resources must come through self-reliance and the black community, there became a strong interest in the charter school movement in various parts of the country. And some of our veteran institutions, CB institutions, looked at the charter school legislation as an opportunity to obtain resources that would allow them to expand their institution. And as a result of that perspective, that they could still be nationalist and ideological and philosophical perspectives for institutional building, and still receive money from the public school system, because that's what the charter school does. It pays the equivalent per pupil expenditure for students enrolled in a charter school. And so there became, again, an ideological shift within CB between those advocates of charter school resources and those advocates of remaining independent and with self-reliance. And so that caused some of our members to terminate their membership because they were no longer eligible based on our definition of independence. So that's still a very strong issue around the country. We have not been able to resolve it other than to consider the fact that he who plays the pipers calls the pipers tune. And we know historically that if you are unable to maintain your family, your organization, your community institutions based on self-reliance, He who controls the resources controls those institutions. So we're standing tall in our belief that African-centered education must be community-based and independent in order to educate our children to their maximum potential.
Okay. Baba Ajay, the San Corporate Conference this year, you were expounding on this concept of many of the leaders or elders in some of the CB institutions not gravitating out of various national, political, nationalist ideologies from maybe the 50s or 60s or 70s. The question I'm asking is, what are some of the, I guess, concrete things that you can look back on and see that some of the elders did not do in relation to what you all are doing at Nation House that played a part in their institutions either closing or them making them ideological shifts? Is my question clear?
Well, I can take a stab at it, and you can correct me if I'm going off course. Is that what was apparent in the course of the 70s and 80s is that those institutions that prospered or sustained themselves were based on a family or several families that had made an uncompromisable commitment to both the institution and to the cultural ideological principles on which they built and established the institution. And that those families provided the main course or source of the funding or the resources that allowed those institutions to survive and sustain themselves. And that those institutions that found themselves either both in ambition and in scale out of sync with their actual base, core base, then most of those institutions opted to go charter. Many of them opted to go charter or just simply close their doors. Now, those who stayed within scope of their base, their funding base or resource base, both monetary and human resources, were able to sustain themselves. And additionally, those who stayed the course in terms of their identity were also clear in terms of what their mission was. That means they had a mission statement. And they understood that they were going to be relatively small in numbers. And thereby, they needed to plan for the transmission of their mission to their children and to their grandchildren. Now, those who had that family focus and those who had a clear mission, I don't think deviated. And those who did not have grand ambitions in terms of scale and wealth did not deviate. But once they adopted that particular model, then many of them ran into trouble, whether or not they were sincere in that at the outset or not. But once they adopted that particular model of scale and resources, and that became the defining element in their operations, then they either went charter, went private, I mean private in terms of mainstream private, or they went out of existence.
Wow. All right. Baba Hannibal, we have probably about 15 minutes left on the show. Can you talk a little bit about what some of the things that you're doing down in Mississippi? I know that you do the survival training, and there are many other activities that you have in Mississippi, and if you can just let the listening audience know what you are doing and how they can get in contact with you.
Well, this is a very interesting period for nation building. Our city of Atoto, as I indicated, was established in 72. We existed for 31 years to 2003. I came to Mississippi in 99 to work with the Provisional Government of the Republic of Africa in rural community development. And after the city of Atoto ceased its operation in 2003, I created a non-profit community youth achievers, and it became the institutional member for for CB, and has been since. We wanted to develop a training center that would allow us to create then a foundation for a new institution. And over the period of time from 2004 to 2008, we continued with our survival training programs and various other activities. I have a 5-acre homestead in Hermansville, Mississippi, in Claiborne County. But we were limited in our scope because we did not have a facility that would allow us to expand on our program. So January of 2008, we purchased 2 mobile homes and did some renovations and established what we call an environmental village campus to be a prototype sustainable community. We were able to offer food, clothing, shelter, education, health, and security on our training center for our member families. Now, we wanted to learn and study the success of other CB institutions that had developed a village concept. Again, we looked at Nation House Positive Action Center and Rockabilly Society for its work that they've established in Virginia with creating not only an extension of Nation House on their Black South states in Middle Virginia, but expanding their programs to the Rockabilly Leadership Training Retreat, the Nasser Spiritual Festival, and a series of activities, including the Chan Corporate Conference. So this gave a more holistic approach in expansion of the school into the community and beyond so that families could develop a community that was African-centered and achieved those goals that Baba Hadje had already articulated. We also looked at the Organization of Black Unity in San Antonio, Texas, the New World Learning Center, who not only has a school, but it has a bookstore, restaurant, community programs, a garden, and various other activities that extends the school into the community and develops a community of families to promote the concept of African-centered lifestyle, family development, and institution building. And then in St. Louis, Hope and Aquino, New African Village, Frederick Douglass Institute, became another model where the school extending itself into the community, purchased buildings and property, and building a communal atmosphere, an environment that would encourage parents and families to come together and work toward nation-building projects. So what we wanted to do was to take the lessons from those 3 institutes and adapt it to a real environment so that we can learn how to build a nation from the ground up. So we have at least a dozen programs that we have already in existence. We have an organic garden. We have animal husbandry. We have a science laboratory. We have solar energy projects. We're getting into aquaculture projects. We do elder training. We just finished our African eldership training, leadership training. We'll be doing a environmental science day camp in June. We're hosting the New African Family retreat day in August. We do a lot of things. And our major project that we are looking forward to is biotechnology, where we'll be able to develop techniques for alternative renewable energy resources. So all of this is ongoing. Shrine architecture, we have the Sankofa Shrine of Victory. We have the U.S. New Concept Hunting Club and Marksmanship Range. There's just a lot of energy being developed in this small space as a 357551 by 7.
Father Hannibal. 601-535-7646. Father Hannibal, can you give it one more time?
601-535-7551. Fax?
All right.
601-535-7646. Email cyavillage@yahoo.com. Give us a call, contact us, pay a visit, we will welcome you.
All right, I say, Baba IJ, very quickly, I just want to say, I've told you this personally, but I just want to say it again, that what Nation House is doing, Uncle B, a society, what have you, in relation to the Sankofa Conference and ALTR and many of the other activities that are taking place, you are providing a home for a lot of African people, black people who are trying to re-Africanize themselves. And it's very interesting how some people stumble upon coming to Nation House for the Sankofa Conference, and some people are dragged there, and then some people come consciously. And I think it was in 1999, either 2000, where I actually stumbled upon Nation House. I was in D.C. for a Capoeira Angola workshop down with Mestre Cobrinha, and we came to the graduation at, then it was at Howard University. And I remember going to the graduation, what have you, and I think the very next day I came to the conference. But the conference, you know, for many of the sovereign-minded or African-centered or, you know, conscious people is a safe haven for us to come every year and see other African people that look like us, dress like us, think like us, and that is on the same path of trying to erect ourselves in relation to re-Africanization, family development, and nation building. I'm saying all that to say that, one, I personally want to say again, the work that you are doing is I really can't put it into words, because what it does for many of us is it rejuvenates us every year. We always talk about the Sankofa Conference as being our spiritual rejuvenation, you know. It is good to come back and see the growth that everybody is going through, you know, not just people at Nation House, but other people in other places. You know, we get to see each other once a year, and we nod our heads, and after a while, those nods become hugs. And before you know it, they exchange the numbers, and after that, we begin to network and build and begin to try to continue this work of building sovereign institutions in other cities. So I'm saying all that to say, if you can just give people here that's listening just some brief information about Uncle Bear Society, and how that actually had played a role in Nation House, the school. Just, you know, how you all were able to bridge the traditional African spiritual practices with the educational practice.
Well, it's consistent with the point I was making earlier, is that we had to come to the reality is that we would only be able to survive not as a reaction to America, but as an affirmation of who we are as a people. That's the critical point that we had to come to. The critical principle that will provide for our continuing is that we are Africans, and as Africans, we are obligated to our ancestry, to our family, and to those spirits that continue to walk with us, to be sure that we establish ourselves, our institutions, our communities in a way that provide for our perpetuation and the perpetuation of that history, which predates anything and any other people, any other civilization, any other society. And so our first mission then, given our history as a people in this part of the world and the way in which we came to this part of the world, we should understand that that occasioned a good deal of chaos and confusion, and that it's going to take a long time to unwork that. And so our first duty then is to provide first for family, provide for community. We have to build a community, and that community has to be centered on the culture, on the correct and appropriate understanding of the history, and the principles that come with that history, and particularly, and more specifically, with the culture that occasioned that history. And that is, in building those institutions, is our obligation, our responsibility, and it's one that will transcend and go beyond this generation. Now, we can go into all kinds of plans and details and activities, and, you know, when we were younger, and younger, about 30 or 40 years, You know, we had grand and grandiose plans, but it's those fundamental things that we need to understand and move on. One, we have to deal with family. We have to be sure that our children understand the passion that we had when we started these institutions. But then also be clear that the lessons of history tells us that culture is the motivating force in history and in reality, and that our culture, our history, cannot be reconciled with that of the non-African, particularly the European. And that it is our obligation not to act in reaction to him or them or others, any other society, but to know that we have to move and understand the dynamic that is essential to who we are as a people, and that our institutions need to reflect that. But in the midst of the confusion in which our people find themselves, particularly in this part of the world, and even that has a purpose, but in the midst of that confusion, we have to identify again those fundamental truths, that we are Africans, that in that Africans, that our culture is our culture. It is primordial. It is ancient. It cannot be chopped away. It cannot be dissipated. It cannot be assimilated. We are who we are because we are who we are. And that's our mission. That's our goal. That's our destiny. And we'll do everything that's appropriate and necessary to see that we can transmit that to our children and prepare them as best as possible to continue the work that we're going to do. And understand that this is a very embryonic stage in our development. I mean, that's one of the lessons we learned, too. We cannot be too impatient. And that what we need will be there when we need it. And I think that's again, the lesson of our ancestors. What we need will be there when we need it. And as we grow to the point where it's appropriate and necessary to have it, it'll be there. And that our ultimate goal will be accomplished. We will see sovereignty. We may not see it, but it will come. And I'm confident of that. And certainly my family is, our institution is, and all the work we've done is testament to that. We are confident that the day will come and we're going to do our small part of this generation. And it said that our ancestors did the hard work. That's what slavery was about. It was hard work to survive. We don't have to worry about survive. We have to worry about the confusion that we have in this day and age. If we can get past that and survive that, our children should be fine.
All right, Ashe. You talked about, you know, culture being a main component, and I just want to give a shout-out to who performed this weekend at Dance Africa. And anytime that you see that Khan perform, you'll understand that it's a generational transition. You'll understand that, you know, many of you all have done 30 or 40 years ago or set out to do is being transmitted or actually being...
Hello.
So, can you hear me?
I hear you now. I lost you for a while.
Yes.
Okay. I was essentially saying that with Fedafina Khan, that, you know, the work that you all had set out to do 30 or 40 years ago, that watching them today, you can see, you know, you can see the transmission in their work, you know, in the dancing and the drumming and all of the cultural things that they do in the dance company, the drum company, that, you know, that's the kind of work that we are aspiring to do here in Trenton. And I know Ijoba Shule, Baba Sekou, and I talk about that all the time, that the younger children that we're bringing up, we want them to be practitioners of the culture, you know. And a lot of times we're missing the mark in African-centered education today because we think that we're essentially forced to get our children prepared to take a test so that they can go out and get a job. And they can point the finger and say, my graduate now works for Morgan Stanley. And you know, our institutions are not trying to produce those type of students, you know. So in conclusion of the show, I want to thank my guests, again, Baba Hannibal Afrique, and also Baba Ajay Okoto. Baba Hannibal, we have about, I would say, 2 minutes. Can you close us out, please?
Well, see, the college of black institutions has its model dedicated to excellence. And I think we've demonstrated, you can compare what CB institutions have produced with probably any other institution that is African-centered and independent in this country, that you will see graduates, you'll see families, you'll see parents, and you'll see teachers who are committed to the proposition that African children can achieve their maximum educational potential, and that we as an African people have the right and the responsibility of self-governance, independent institution building for sovereignty. That's our mission. We're going to stay on course, and we encourage your listening audience to participate in CB's mission and its work ahead.
All right. You are listening to the Liberated Zone with your host, Bayer Gimmick, and I hope you will tune in again.
Yeah, I lost it.
Yeah. All right. I'll show you.